In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. I've been watching near-death experience interviews and noticed a pattern in many of the interviews. It's often mentioned by the individual experiencing the NDE, whether relayed by an angel or relative, how important our thoughts, feelings, and intention are in creating our reality. One woman who accidentally overdosed was found unconscious amid the trash in an alleyway. She also brought back a message from the afterlife. The message was to tell people about how our thoughts and intention shape the experience we have in this life. She also referenced the work of Neville Goddard. Neville Goddard was a British Barbadian born in the West Indies in 1905. He was a writer, speaker, and mystic. In one of Goddard's presentations, he says, quote, "The world is not resisting you. It's responding to you. Every event, every person, every so-called coincidence is shaped by the inner tones of your being. So if you walk through life assuming lack, you will experience lack. It must be first constructed in the mind, in the imagination, before it takes form in the material world. You are not waiting for money to come to you. You are birthing it into existence through the assumption that it's already yours. Doubt is the only thing that can disrupt this process." We've heard this before in many different ways from various authors influenced by Goddard's work, such as Wayne Dyer. Is the fabric of our reality a pliable substrate for our conscious minds to interface with? In the book Time Storms by Jenny Randles, published in 2001, she writes, quote, "In essence, matter was found to comprise a flux, a myriad of energy fields whose complex interactions created what to our eyes often appear as particles. Nevertheless, this discovery proved that at a fundamental level, all reality was immaterial and not rock solid. The hard, logical universe that behaved like ping pong balls bouncing off a bat was, in truth, a sea of invisible radiation energy in the form of waves." I quote Randles as a reminder of how our intention can be measured in water. Past guest Konstantin Korotkov experimented with this and explained how he also measured orgone energy or etheric energy. The subtle energy fields of thought, intention, and emotion have a measurable impact on the unseen realms, and according to Neville Goddard, can ultimately manifest into the visible realm. We go now to hear part of a presentation from Neville Goddard. Let's have a listen.
"For a moment, take a deep breath. Let go of every thought that ties you to the world outside. There is something I must tell you, something that will change your life forever. You have been searching, trying, hoping, and yet the one thing that holds you back is your inability to feel. You want to see proof first, to touch it, to grasp it with your hands, but this is not how creation works. The secret lies in your ability to assume, to believe, and most importantly, to feel that what you desire is already yours. Right now, I ask you, what do you want? Is it love, success, wealth, health? It does not matter, for all things are possible when you learn to feel. The moment you allow yourself to step into the reality of your wish fulfilled, the unseen forces move to bring it into form. You do not need permission from the world. You do not need to beg, to struggle, to chase. You only need to shift within, to accept without resistance that your desire is already yours. Tonight, before you sleep, I ask you to do this. Enter that drowsy state, that quiet moment before dreams take over, and imagine yourself living the life you desire. But do not just see it. Feel it. Feel the warmth of love if you seek companionship. Feel the joy of success if you desire wealth. Feel the ease of health if you long for healing. Hold on to that feeling until it becomes natural, until it feels like home. Release it. Walk in faith. Do not search for signs. The world must follow what you have already accepted as true. You are the creator, the architect of your own destiny. When you feel something is real, it is already done. There is a hidden force within you, one that has been overlooked, dismissed, and misunderstood. It is not found in effort, struggle, or force. Yet it has the power to shape your reality, to turn your desires into tangible experiences. This force is feeling. You have been taught to believe that hard work, persistence, and external actions are the primary tools for success. You have been told that if you want something, you must chase it relentlessly, work tirelessly, and fight against the odds. But what if I told you that the secret is not in effort, but in knowing, in assuming, in feeling your desire is already fulfilled? This is the key that unlocks the unseen and brings it into form. Right now, think of the one thing you truly desire. Perhaps it is financial abundance, a loving relationship, vibrant health, or success in a chosen field. Whatever it may be, notice how your mind instinctively calculates how it will come, how long it will take, or whether it is even possible. This is the conditioning of the physical world, a world that demands proof before belief. But creation does not work this way. The truth is the reverse. Believe first, and the proof will follow. Everything you have in your life right now is a reflection of past assumptions and dominant feelings. You did not consciously struggle for every single thing you possess. Much of it came naturally because, at some level, you felt it was yours. The house you live in, the people you interact with, the circumstances you find yourself in, all of it was once an invisible feeling, a silent assumption, a state you occupied within before it materialized without. The mistake many make is trying to force a new reality while still feeling lack, doubt, or desperation. They visualize wealth while feeling poor. They affirm love while feeling lonely. They work hard but carry the underlying belief that success is difficult. This contradiction keeps them stuck, for it is not the thought alone that manifests, but the feeling behind it. Feeling is the substance of creation. It is the energy that molds reality. You must learn to assume the feeling of already having what you desire. When you close your eyes and imagine yourself living in the fullness of your wish fulfilled, do not merely see it, feel it. Feel the peace of abundance, the security of success, the joy of love. Let it sink into your being until it feels natural, until it no longer feels like a dream, but a memory. This is not daydreaming. This is creation. The moment you accept a feeling as true, reality begins shifting to match it. You may not see changes immediately, but the unseen forces are already at work. Stay faithful to this new feeling, walk in it, speak from it, and most importantly, rest in it. Do not let the outer world deceive you. Circumstances do not matter. Only your inner state does. If you persist in the feeling of your desire fulfilled, the world must conform. It has no choice. For feeling is the secret, and what you feel, you become. Your imagination is the foundation of your reality. Everything you see, touch, and experience in the physical world first existed in the unseen realm of thought. Every great invention, every towering skyscraper, every work of art, and every success story began as an idea, an image held in the mind. But it is not merely thinking or wishing that brings these things to life. It is the assumption that they are real, the feeling of their truth, that causes them to manifest. Your imagination is not a place of idle fantasy. It is the workshop of creation. The reality you live in today is the direct result of what you have imagined and accepted as true in the past. Whether you were aware of it or not, your dominant assumptions shape the course of your life. The relationships you have, the money in your account, the opportunities before you, all of it is a reflection of your inner world. If you wish to change what you see, you must first change what you imagine and feel to be real. Many people believe they are victims of circumstances, but nothing in your external world has power over you unless you accept it as true. The outer world is a shadow, a reflection of your internal state. If you persist in the assumption of lack, struggle, or rejection, your world must mirror that experience. But if you dare to assume and feel the reality of abundance, ease, and love, then your world must shift to reflect that new assumption. Feeling is the bridge between imagination and manifestation. It is not enough to merely think about what you want. You must feel it as if it were already yours. The subconscious mind does not respond to words alone. It responds to emotion, to the depth of conviction behind the thought. If you imagine yourself wealthy while secretly feeling poor, your dominant feeling will win and poverty will persist. But if you assume the feeling of wealth, of security, or financial ease, even before a single dollar appears, the world must rearrange itself to make that assumption real. Your imagination is limitless, and so are the possibilities before you. Nothing is too big, too difficult, or too far beyond reach. The only limits that exist are those you place on yourself through doubt and disbelief. The moment you release these limitations and dwell in the feeling of your desire fulfilled, the world begins to shift. People, events, and opportunities move in ways you could not have predicted. Paths open where there were none before. What once seemed impossible becomes inevitable. The key is persistence. You must remain faithful to your inner vision regardless of what the outer world shows you. Do not be deceived by temporary appearances. The delay between assumption and manifestation is only an illusion meant to test your faith. If you continue to live in the feeling of your desire, without wavering, without doubting, then what you have imagined will harden into fact. Everything begins within. Your imagination creates your reality, and feeling is the force that brings it to life. Assume the best, feel it as real, and watch as your world transforms before your eyes. The world you see around you is not as solid or fixed as it seems. Everything that appears in your reality is merely a reflection of your past thoughts, beliefs, and assumptions. Your senses tell you that circumstances are real, that what is in front of you is all there is. But this is an illusion. The physical world is not the cause of your experiences. It is the effect. The cause is within you. Most people live as though the outside world has power over them. They react to what they see, hear, and feel, believing that circumstances dictate their emotions, their actions, and their possibilities. If they see lack, they believe in lack. If they experience rejection, they assume they are unworthy. They allow what appears now to determine what they will continue to experience. But if you live this way, you are merely chasing shadows. You are allowing the past to repeat itself because you are holding on to what your senses tell you is true. If you wish to change your reality, you must first detach from what your senses report. Do not let the external world define you. It is not permanent. It is not unchangeable. It is simply a reflection of what you once assumed to be true. To create something new, you must turn your attention inward and shift your inner state. You must feel differently first, before the world can reflect it back to you. Think of a mirror. If you frown into it, it does not smile back at you. The image only changes when you change. Reality works the same way. If you feel poor, neglected, or unworthy, the world will continue to reflect that back to you. But if you assume a new feeling, if you persist in the belief that you are abundant, loved, and successful, the mirror must change. It has no choice. The world is only responding to what you assume to be true. This is why detachment is essential. If you remain emotionally tied to what your senses show you, you will keep reinforcing the same reality. You must rise above appearances and live from a deeper knowing. The knowing that what you feel within now is what will soon become real in the world outside. Ignore the current circumstances if they do not align with your desires. They are nothing more than echoes of old beliefs. They are not permanent. They are not final. Detachment does not mean ignoring your responsibilities or withdrawing from life. It means refusing to be controlled by the illusion of lack, failure, or limitation. It means choosing your inner state rather than letting the world choose it for you. When you master this, you become free. You no longer react to life, you create it. Your only job is to hold on to the feeling of what you desire as if it is already true. The world will catch up. It must. The unseen always precedes the seen. Change how you feel and reality will follow. Let go of doubt, stop reacting, and trust in the unseen power within you. Your world will transform before your eyes. You do not need to beg for what is already yours. You do not need to wish, to hope, or to look outside of yourself for signs that your desire is coming. If you truly understood the power within you, you would know that desire itself is proof of its fulfillment. The moment you desire something, it already exists in an unseen reality. Your only task is to dwell in the end, to assume and feel that it is already yours. Most people live in a state of waiting. They hope, they long, they wish for a future in which their dreams will come true. But in doing so, they keep their desire in the future, always just out of reach. They send signals to their subconscious mind that they do not have what they want, and so the world reflects that lack. The secret is not in waiting, but in assuming, in stepping into the state of already having it. Think of your deepest desire. Instead of seeing it as something separate from you, something you must chase or work for, imagine it as already fulfilled. How would you feel if you had it right now? How would you move, speak, and think if it were already done? Let that feeling consume you. Let it become your natural state. The more you dwell in this feeling, the more real it becomes. Until the world has no choice but to conform. You do not need to know how your desire will manifest. That is not your concern. The world will rearrange itself in ways you cannot predict. Opportunities will arise, circumstances will shift, and people will play their part, all aligning to bring your assumption into reality. But you must remain faithful to the end result. You must persist in the feeling of fulfillment, regardless of what the outer world currently shows you. This is where many people fail. They begin to assume, to feel the reality of their wish, but then they look around and see no immediate change. Doubt creeps in. They check for signs. They question whether it is working, and they slip back into their old state of longing. This wavering undoes their work. To manifest what you desire, you must remain unmoved by appearances. You must trust that what you have assumed is already in motion, even if there is no visible evidence yet. Think of planting a seed. You do not dig it up every day to check if it is growing. You trust the process, knowing that beneath the surface, unseen forces are at work. The same is true for your desires. Once you have assumed them to be true, your only job is to live in that state. To think, feel, and act as though it is already done. This is the secret of effortless creation. When you stop trying to make things happen and instead dwell in the end, reality bends to match your inner world. What once seemed impossible will unfold naturally, without force or struggle. Simply be the person who already has what they desire, and the world will reflect it. It is law. Every night as you close your eyes and drift into sleep, you stand at the doorway of creation. In this drowsy, relaxed state, your conscious mind fades, and your subconscious becomes highly impressionable. It no longer argues, doubts, or questions. It simply accepts. This is the most powerful moment to reshape your reality, to implant the feeling of your wish fulfilled so deeply that it must manifest in the world around you. Most people go to sleep in a state of worry, regret, or frustration. They replay the troubles of the day, dwell on their struggles, and unknowingly impress these negative feelings upon their subconscious. The next day, they wake up to more of the same circumstances because they have unknowingly recreated them in their sleep. But you can use this time differently. You can enter the state of the wish fulfilled and allow your subconscious to make it real. Before sleep, let go of the outer world. Do not concern yourself with what is happening, what has happened, or what may come. None of that matters. All that matters is the reality you are about to create within. Close your eyes, relax your body, and enter a state of calm. Feel the heaviness of sleep approaching, but remain aware enough to direct your thoughts. This is the perfect moment to assume the feeling of your desire already being yours. See yourself in the life you want, not as an observer, but as a participant. If your desire is love, feel the warmth of it surrounding you. If it is success, hear the words of praise spoken to you. If it is abundance, sense the security and ease of having more than enough. Make the scene as vivid as possible, but more importantly, let it be natural. Do not force it. Let it unfold effortlessly, as though you are recalling a memory rather than creating a fantasy. The key is not just to visualize, but to feel. Feeling is the language of the subconscious. If you simply watch images in your mind without emotion, you are only daydreaming. But the moment you attach a deep, genuine feeling to the scene, as though it is happening now, your subconscious accepts it as truth. And what the subconscious accepts as true, it must bring to life. Persist in this feeling until sleep takes over. Let yourself drift off in the assumption that your desire is already fulfilled. This is not a time to think about how it will happen or to question whether it is working. This is a time to surrender to the feeling of already having what you want. By doing this, you impress your subconscious with the new reality, and it will work tirelessly to manifest it in ways beyond your comprehension. When you wake, resist the urge to doubt. Do not look at the outer world for immediate proof. Simply trust that the seed has been planted and allow it to unfold. The world you wake up to will soon begin to change, aligning itself with the assumption you fell asleep in. This is the secret of effortless creation. If you sleep each night in the feeling of the wish fulfilled, the day will come when you no longer have to imagine it, because it will be your reality. Faith is not hoping, wishing, or waiting for proof. Faith is feeling a deep inner knowing that what you have assumed is already yours. The world may show you nothing yet, there may be no physical evidence, but the moment you feel something as real within, it has already begun to materialize. Most people believe only in what they can see, hear, or touch. They wait for confirmation from the outside world before they allow themselves to believe. But this is not faith. Faith does not require proof. Faith is the ability to feel something into being, to trust in the unseen so completely that it must appear in the seen. Right now, whatever you desire, whether it is love, success, wealth, or healing, exists as a possibility. It is not separate from you. The only thing keeping it at a distance is your belief that it is not yet real. But the moment you accept it within, the moment you feel its reality before seeing it, the process of manifestation begins. Your subconscious takes that feeling as truth, and the world around you starts to shift to reflect it. Most people sabotage their own desires by looking for evidence too soon. They assume their wish fulfilled for a moment, then immediately check their surroundings to see if anything has changed. When they see the same circumstances, they doubt, they question, and they fall back into their old state of lack. This wavering cancels out their assumption. You must persist in the feeling of your wish fulfilled, regardless of what the physical world shows you. Think of a seed planted in the soil. The moment you plant it, the process of growth has already begun, even though you cannot see it yet. If you keep digging it up to check if it is growing, you will only delay its progress. The same is true for your desires. Once you have assumed them as real within, leave them undisturbed. Trust that the unseen forces are working to bring them into form. Feeling is the secret ingredient. It is not enough to simply say, I believe. You must feel the reality of your desire. If you desire love, feel the warmth and joy of being in that loving relationship now. If you desire success, feel the confidence, the satisfaction, the ease of already being successful. Do not wait for the world to give you permission to feel this way. Feel it now, and the world will follow. Faith is not passive. It is an active state of being. It is living as though your desire is already a fact, speaking as though it is done, walking as though you are the person who already has it. When you truly embody this feeling, you will no longer need proof, because you know it is done. And once you know it is done within, it must become done without. This is the great mystery of creation. The world does not shape your belief shapes the world. Change your inner feeling, hold firm in your faith, and reality will bend to match it. Everything you seek, love, success, abundance, or peace, begins within you. The outer world is nothing more than a reflection of your inner state. When you learn to assume the feeling of your wish fulfilled, to trust in the unseen, and to persist in that inner knowing, you become the master of your reality. There is no need to struggle, chase, or doubt. Simply feel it as real, and the world will rearrange itself to match your assumption. Do not be deceived by what your senses show you today. The circumstances you see are only the echoes of past thoughts and beliefs. But you are not bound by them. At any moment, you can step into a new state of being, a new assumption, and watch as your world transforms before you. The key is faith. Not blind hope, but the deep, unwavering feeling that it is already done. If you can fall asleep in the state of your fulfilled desire, if you can carry that knowing throughout your day, and if you can trust that the unseen is more real than the seen, then nothing will be impossible for you. You are the creator of your reality. Feel it, believe it, and it must be so. Thank you.
If you're just tuning in, we're listening to excerpts of a presentation by Neville Goddard. Many of us have been plagued with worrying about the future. Another distraction from the present state of awareness, from being in the here and now, the object of meditation. Recall the work of past guest Jerry Marzinski, who worked with schizophrenics and revealed the voices they were hearing aren't hallucinations, but actual entities feeding off the victim's negative emotional state and essentially past trauma. I suspect the human adversary here, such as the etheric parasite Marzinski mentions, or for example, the composite corporate media narrative, would benefit having people to be pining about something in the past and or worried about future events. If you're preoccupied with the past and future, you're suffering, according to past guest Dr. Paul Dobransky. As listeners know, learning how to exercise the ability to be in the moment is the object of meditative teachings. Psychedelic drugs can temporarily place the user in the moment, where sometimes it becomes obvious how the undisciplined mind will drift into the future or the past. Goddard points out the value of being present in the moment, and this is where the miracle of creation begins. And there's more to it, as you'll hear. It's a challenging spiritual exercise, and discipline, if mastered, in my opinion, would dispel low-level anxiety and possibly etheric parasites. Here's another quote by Jenny Randles. Quote, "To see anything requires photons of light sent to activate our senses, but something has to cause these photons to be emitted. This means, in effect, knocking on the quantum door with a beam of energy and getting the photons to respond. If we don't knock on the door, the photons stay hidden. So, in order to see anything, or indeed to experience reality, we have to do something that actually helps force that reality into being. We change what can be witnessed by the very act of seeking to observe it. Ludicrous as this concept seems, it is established. Seeing is not so much the cause of believing as believing is, in fact, of seeing. One of the first to set this bizarre prospect into mathematical rules was the German physicist Werner Heisenberg in 1926. He defined the rules of quantum reality. Later, he formulated his uncertainty principle. End quote. I'll leave it there. But the reality substrate seems to be a pliable medium for our conscious minds to project intention and emotion into. We go now to hear the rest of the presentation.
With God, all things are possible. I don't think you'd be here if you did not believe in God. And a God to whom all things are possible. But maybe we stop right there and we separate man from God. And my purpose is to show you that we are not two, that we are one. That same creative word that created the universe and sustains it dwells in us. Therefore, with God, all things are possible. And therefore, with man, all things are possible. So he states it in one book, Matthew, with God, all things are possible. But in Mark, he states it, all things are possible to him, meaning man, who believes. Can man believe? So this creative word is in us. Well, what is this creative word? It's your own wonderful human imagination. That's Christ in man. Man is all imagination. So when you say, I am, that's he. Now, can you believe that you are now the man that you would like to be, though at the moment of your assumption, reason denies it, and your senses deny it? Can you really conceive a scene which, if true, would imply the fulfillment of your dream? What would it feel like if it were true? How would I feel if I were now the man that I would like to be? How would I know that I could become it? Well, I first, as I assume that I am it, let me think of my friends, those who really would rejoice with me were it true. Let me imagine that I am seeing them in my mind's eye. How do they see me? If what I am assuming is true, they should see me as I am seeing myself. And if they are friends, they should rejoice with me. So let me now assume that I am seeing, reflected on the face of a friend, that which, if I saw it, would imply he sees in me that which I have assumed that I am. Will that work? Try it. I tell you from my own personal experience it works. It doesn't work itself. I can tell you that your imagination is Christ. And maybe you'll believe me. But unless you actually take it to the point of working upon it and operating it, it means nothing. Well, if this night I really believe it, I would not allow the sun to go down in my sleep unless I feel myself right into the situation of the wish fulfilled. What would you feel like if now you were the man that you want to be? How would you see the world if things were as you desire them to be? Now, this is what I mean by living in the end. Robert Frost, just the year before he departed this sphere, he wrote this story for Life magazine. And he said the founding fathers did not believe in the future. What a shock. They did not believe in the future. They believed it in. He said we are always imagining ahead of our evidence. And the most creative thing in man is to believe a thing in. They had no evidence to support their claim to democracy. They were under a king when they threw the king away and began to simply build a concept of the future. They did not believe that the mere passage of time would bring them that dream. They believed it in. And these men believed implicitly in the word of God. And they believed that If I know what I want, when I pray, believe that I have received it, and I will. Well, if that precept is true, literally true, to be accepted literally and fulfilled literally, well, then what am I doing not believing? I should actually know exactly what I would like to be, and discovering what I would like to be as against what I seem to be, dare to assume that I am it. And my assumption, though false, if persisted in, will harden into fact. But if I really know what I want, what you want, what we want, and persuade myself that we have it, if my premise is sound, that imagining creates reality, I should, in the not distant future, hear you tell me that it's worked for you, and the other one tells me, and I in turn tell you, and go through life sharing this marvelous news with others. So I say, live as though it were true. Just as though it were true. If the Word is truly the Word that creates the system of it, in which we live. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. By Him all things were made, and without Him was not anything made that was made. No, not even the so-called unlovely things. For if all things were made, He has to be responsible for the unlovely things as well. So we are told in Scripture, I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. I create the blessing, I create the curses. But now I must choose life. Choose the lovely things, but don't say there's another creator. For if there's another creator, then we are in conflict. So my own imagination can conjure unlovely things if I dwell upon them, or the lovely things. But they can't be two gods. They can't be two creators. And if I can find that creator and identify him with my own wonderful human imagination, then I can pass the buck. I can't turn to anything and blame it for the things happening in my life. But I know that many of us are not discriminating, and when we see our own harvest, we don't recognize it. We can't conceive that we, in some strange manner, permitted these things to be entertained by us. But we did. It could not have come to pass in any other way. So if I believe it and accept it, well then I will live by it. And then when I know what I want for anyone, and this goes for everything in this world, whether now, this very moment, you desire happiness in marriage. You say, but there's not one person in my world that's eligible. I know no one. You don't have to know anyone. All you have to do is to decide within yourself what you want. Now, what would you do if it were true? Would you wear a ring on the one finger which would imply that someone places there one that you admire? Well, then, wear it there. Don't wear a physical ring. Put it on just as though he had placed it there. And sleep feeling that which you are feeling as real. Now, catch the mood and try to give that mood all the sensory vividness of reality. All the tones of reality. And then sleep in it. Just as though it were true. And then await the inevitable. The inevitable is you're going to resurrect it and objectify it on the screen of space. And then the world will call it real. And they may not believe you. It doesn't really matter. If you tell them it came to pass because you simply imagined it. Now, they'll point to the series of events that led up to it. And they will give credit to the bridge of incident across which you walked towards the fulfillment of that state. And they'll point out some physical thing that was the cause. No, the cause is invisible, for the cause is God, and God is invisible to mortal eye. Who knows what you're imagining? No one knows, but you can sit down and imagine, and no one can stop you from doing it. But can you give reality to the imagined state? If you do, yes, a bridge of incident will appear in your world, and you'll walk across some series of events leading up to the fulfillment of the imaginal state. But don't give causation to any physical step that you took towards the fulfillment of it. You imagine yourself having a marvelous business. And then comes the day a building is for sale, and you haven't a nickel towards it. And a man comes in and asks you quite in a friendly manner, are you going to buy it? And knowing you don't have a penny, you say to him, as you would a friend to a friend, with what? And then he says, well, I have money. It's only in the bank, drawing nothing. You say, but I have no collateral. Well, he said, I watch you. You're an honest person. Your family, they're honest. I think they are. Would you like me to buy it for you? I'll get my lawyer to bid for it. If they knew that I'm bidding, that I have money, they'll bid me up. And so I'll get it at the very lowest price by getting a lawyer who represents more than one client, and they do not know who he represents, and he'll bid for it. Are you willing to take it regardless of the price? And you say, yes, I'll take it. But I have no collateral. All I need is your signature, that you will simply pay 6% on whatever the price is, and then reduce that principal over a period of 10 years. Agreed? Yes. But then sign this, and we'll see if we can buy it. That day, you owned the building. And you didn't have one nickel when you owned the building that day. You only had your signature on a piece of paper. At the end of 10 years, you repaid the man his principal. You reduce it every year, paying him 6% on the remaining principal, and reduce the entire thing at the end of 10 years. That man dies 20 years later and leaves you $150,000 in cash, tax-free, and a couple of homes and many personal belongings. In the meanwhile, you continue in that business, and it multiplies and multiplies. And that year was 1924. This is now 1968. That building, I'm speaking factually, that building in 1924 is now gone. He paid only $50,000 for it. It was repaid and repaid. A bank, 3 years ago, bought the property, because the building was rotted, bought the property for $840,000 in cash and no capital gain. From $50,000 to $840,000. In the meanwhile, the business has expanded into all the other islands so that today you couldn't buy them out for $15 million. All in imagination. And this goes back to the imagination that preceded this man's offer to buy the building. For the young man seeing this building and entertaining a thought that the present owners deceived his father, and through deception got him out of a partnership, a junior partnership. And he was moved not to get even, but to prove that he really had something within him and could be a success in spite of their deception. And so, every day he would see on that marquee, not their name, but his own family's name. And he would see it in his mind's eye, because you could not take their name and transliterate it and make it spell this man's family's name. But he saw it, and in his mind's eye he saw that name, which, if true, would imply the family owned it. He did it every day, twice a day, for 2 years. And then came this sudden, out of the nowhere. And the whole thing was made possible, and today they're all over the islands. And they have no partners. They've never taken in one partner, never sold one bit of stock outside of a family ownership. All by imagination. Now, I know what I'm talking about because I'm a member of that family. I'm speaking of my own family. This is not hearsay. I know it. My second brother, Victor, was the one in whose imagination this whole thing began to bloom. And he still works all by imagination. He knows what he wants, and then after having decided in himself, that's what I want, and that's good for the business, he then, in his mind's eye, he appropriates it. And then let things happen. As told us in Scripture, the vision has its own appointed hour. It ripens, it will flower. If it be long, then wait, for it is sure, and it will not be late. Read that in the book of Habakkuk. Here is the true translation of that passage in Habakkuk. So when you know what you want, remain faithful to that assumption. And the assumption, though at the moment, is denied by your senses and denied by reason. If you persist in it, it will harden into fact. Are we not told that God calls a thing that is not seen as though it were seen, and then the unseen becomes seen? He calls everything from the unseen into the seen in this simple manner. For he is the resurrecting power. So if I assume that I am, I don't have to have
evidence to support it, I assume that I am. I am what? Well, I name it. And having given it a name, given it form, given it definition, remaining in it, I resurrect it. And if it takes 1,000 men to aid the birth of that state, 1,000 men will play their parts. And I don't have to go out and look for them, any more than my brother had to go out and look for this man. He would not have known where to start looking for one the day of the sale. As far as he is concerned, he had done it in his mind's eye, and he allowed everything to happen, and he comes right in like a joke. He really thought it was a joke. And he said to this man, are you fooling me? He said, no. He said, well, then wait, let me call my father. He said, lunch. He called him on the wire. He said, Daddy, come on up. Leave everything and come. And then he said, now you tell my father what you told me. My father's name is Joseph. And my father said, you really mean it? He said, yes, Joe, I mean it. I'll have him bid today. You put your signature here, and your son Victor put his signature. That's all I need. And that was a lifetime friendship. So when that man died, he didn't owe my brother Victor anything. He so loved the friendship and the feeling of, well, decency that he had with my brother Victor, he gave him $150,000 in cash. And that was tax-free. And the homes, everything was tax-free. And that building, which he bought for $50,000, was sold 3 years ago to the Bank of Nova Scotia. They tore it down and built a lovely structure, but they paid our family $840,000 for that building. So here was a gain, and there was no capital tax gain. None. That whole thing was simply free. So I know what I'm talking about. All I need from you is the acceptance of it. Will you believe it? Will you believe that with God all things are possible? Will you believe that all things are possible to men? Well, you can prove it in the not distant future. But you are the operant power. It will not work itself. If you dare to assume this very night that you have a better job than you now hold, or that you have a larger income, you may be fired tomorrow. Don't be concerned. On reflection, you'll see it was necessary to move you towards the fulfillment of your assumption. You could be fired. And I wouldn't bat an eye if you told me tomorrow, well, I did what you told me. You know what happened? I was fired. I have seen that. It takes someone to fire you to get you into a better job. I have seen that time and again. I wouldn't go out and quit the job. You may be promoted in the job, or you may be invited by some other concern that is competitive to join them. I do not know how it happens. I only know if you remain faithful to the assumption, it's going to happen. And you're going to be promoted towards the fulfillment of the state that you have dared to assume that is yours. I could tell you unnumbered stories along this nature. So here I say, dwell in the end. The end is where we begin. For if I see my name on the marquee, that's the end. I don't wait for the incident to take place in my world, to move from one to the other, leading up to that, I dwell in the end. If I go to the very end, what would it be like, were it true? A health case, not how it's going to become better, but you go to the end, and you say to someone who isn't well, and in your mind's eye, you say to them, you know, I've never seen you look better. And have them say to you, I've never felt better. Well, now that's confirmation of what you're seeing. You say, I've never seen you look better. And hear them say to you, well, I have never really felt better. So you can do this for good or ill. I advise you, do it for good. But the choice is yours. You can hurt and you can bless, but don't hurt. Use your imagination always lovingly on behalf of others. But to tell you that you couldn't do it to hurt is stupid, because you can hurt. But it's entirely up to you. So you imagine what you want. Believe that you have it and see how it works in the world. Those who scoff at it, or let them scoff. 5 years from now, when you're on the top, they may be working for you. And they've even forgotten that they sat in the same audience with you when you heard and believed, and they also heard, but they didn't believe. And so you moved on and they remained behind. And that's life. Now tonight, you need not confine it to yourself. Take a friend. Without the friend's consent, without the friend's knowledge and lift him up. Do you know of a friend who is unemployed? Well, then see him gainfully employed. And don't tell him that you may brag tomorrow. Don't boast. Just see him gainfully employed. Here's a friend of mine in L.A., and this man was unmercifully bawled out by his superiors and told that he was no earthly good, and they are considering letting him go. They're going to fire him. Well, the man had no support outside of the job, and he had a family. So he told my friend, well, my friend lives by this law. So he said to him, all right, go your way. Didn't tell him what he was going to do. He sat quietly at his desk and heard the man tell him that they praised him beyond measure for something that he had done. It wasn't 48 hours that the complete reversal of their attitude towards this man in their praise of something he did in the advertising world. But the blow had left its mark. And he said to my friend, yes, they've reversed it, but I don't feel easy on the job. Because they could not have said the unlovely things that they said and forgotten them. So it will come back, and I'm going to quit. I have no money. I'm giving them 2 weeks' notice. But I'm going to ask them to give me 1 week of the two, that I may get myself together, maybe take off a few days, and just get my thoughts in order. Well, at the end of 2 weeks, he didn't have a job. My friend, when he told him what he was going to do, my friend knew he could not afford to quit and not work. So he saw him gainfully employed and earning 25% more than the present job. He took off the second week. When he came back at the end of the first week, he came into my friend's office and said, only yesterday I got the offer and I start Monday. I do not lose one day's salary and I start at 25% more than I received on the past job. What did it? My friend's imagination. A loving use of the imagination on behalf of a friend. Had he gone without that imaginal state, he'd have walked into the place, the man would have said, we have nothing. Or we can't use you. Why are you quitting? He didn't ask anything, he simply wanted the man. So if you precede your visit by an imaginal act, they will see you as you see yourself. If you walk in knowing that you're no good, they're going to see you exactly that way. But if you're walking in the assumption that things are as you desire them to be, they're going to see you that way. And this is life. Now, what greater claim can anyone make than to claim that he is God? And when he claimed it, they said he is blaspheming. For here is a man, and the man dares to claim he is God. The 10th of John. And he said, is it not written in your law, I say ye gods, sons of the Most High? If he called them gods to whom the word of God came, do you say of the one that he anointed and sent into the world that he is blaspheming? Do you know of any greater claim in the world than for a man to identify himself with God and walk as though he were? And not be ashamed to admit it? He doesn't go bragging about it, but he knows in his heart he is one with God. For if his imagination is God and he imagines, well then that's God. And if he imagines a state and it comes to pass, then he knows the creative power that is God. He doesn't have to brag about it and boast about it, but he doesn't have to hide it either. He doesn't have to bury it and be ashamed of it. He sleeps in a noble state because he's one with God. But let everyone take that attitude and the world will change. Not be beaten, but you can take the whole vast world, if they feel themselves slaves, give them the world, they'll want it again tomorrow. And if a man has self-respect, you can give him all the money in the world, and it means nothing. That goes for the individual, it goes for a family, it goes for a race of people, it goes for a nation. Just as our late President Hoover said, the rise and fall of ideas will determine the rise and fall of men, the rise and fall of nations, the rise and fall of communities. So tell me the idea the community entertains about itself, and I'll tell you that community. The earliest gospel is Mark, and the first words you find on the lips of this power, the time is fulfilled and the kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe in the gospel. Now the word repent, as we use it in the world, is not what scripture means.
When they use it here, we mean to feel remorse, regret. That has nothing to do with the word repent. It's the Greek metanoia, a radical but radical change of attitude, a radical change of mind. Can I see an objective, and then everything tells me that, well, I can't realize it? Well, do I have the power to realize an objective? I tell you, we have. We have the power. For what is the deeper meaning of power but effectiveness in achieving one's purpose in life? Well, so I have a purpose. Do I have the power? I tell everyone, yes. You can imagine the end, can't you? Can you imagine what it would be like if it were true? Can you feel what it would be like if it were true? Well, then that's the power. Now, can you be persistent in it? Can you remain faithful to that end as though it were true? Now, I don't care what the objective is. You have the power to achieve it if you know this power is the power of Christ.
That was part of a presentation by writer, speaker, and mystic Neville Goddard, a British Barbadian born in the West Indies in 1905. He moved to New York City at age 17 to study drama in 1922. Neville Goddard also emphasizes that God is in us. How many times have you heard that concept in your life? However, Goddard continues by saying, imagine God existing in every living thing. And when you pray to God, you're also praying to God who is also existing in every living thing, including yourself. Neville Goddard published up to 14 books, beginning with the 1939 book titled At Your Command. Others include Freedom for All, A Practical Application of the Bible. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Rady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests. If you want to send some feedback on shows like this, send me an email at inothernewsradio@yahoo.com.